This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas on the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And our third Bad Ideas host, Zach Valenti, is missing in action today.
Well, we know where he is, so he's not missing, but he's doing more important things than taping this podcast.
What could be more important than No Bad Ideas, Sarah? I don't understand.
I think he should have to explain himself when he returns.
All right, fair enough. However, we have a third musketeer here in the digital studio.
Yeah, we do.
With us today. Special guest star. It is the creator of the Atypical Artist Show Greenhouse, as well as audio manager, producer, creator, all around Swiss Army knife of a person. It's Lillian Holman. How are you doing, Lillian?
Hi, I'm doing great. My favorite part of the week.
Thank you so much for coming on No Bad Ideas and sitting in Zach's chair for
Indeed.
An outing.
It's an honor. I will have to, I don't know if I could ever live up to Zach, but I'll try.
You just be you, Lily.
Now, before we get into the bad ideas, I did want to take a second because you have a relatively new show out with Greenhouse. And just in case people have not yet put the Greenhouse into their lives, do you want to tell the folks at home a little bit about what the show is about and why they should listen to it right now?
Sure.
Not right now, but like after this episode.
Like roughly 1 hour from now, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, don't. It wouldn't make sense if you listened right now. Anyway, Greenhouse is an epistolatory love story. It takes place in La Jolla, California, because it's the most beautiful place in the world. But that's less important than the fact that it's...
No, but this is good. This is good. Continue shilling for La Jolla.
Yes.
Their tourism board will be thrilled.
I should have definitely rehearsed this. Anyway, it is a love story between two women. It has Rose, who is a recluse. She lives by herself in a house that she never leaves. And Abby, who is a flower shop owner. And through a very legal, I definitely did the research setup, they are legally required to write letters to each other in order for Rose to stay in her house due to her father's will. And of course, they end up as friends and then possibly more.
Maybe something more.
Maybe something. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's told in little short chunks that are all letter based.
They are all very short, but compulsively listenable to you. Will
yes, very delightful.
Just, it's much like a chocolate. You think you're going to have one and then all of a sudden they're all gone.
You cannot.
And you're like, wait, where can I get more? Wait, when can I get more Greenhouse? We'll talk more about that on the back half of the show. But for now, we have some business to attend to. We have some
bad ideas to
get to. This is the show where we present some of the most ill-conceived notions that humanity has encountered. And then we try to give ourselves just 10 short minutes to try to turn them into the pitch for a good movie, a good TV show, a good comic book, whatever it is, operative word they're being perhaps attempt to. We don't always succeed.
But we have fun trying. Gosh
yes.
Darn it.
We try to have fun. Sarah, Lily, are you ready to jump into our first bad idea?
Not at all.
I'm very ready.
Excellent. This is the dichotomy that I like to work with here at No Bad Ideas. All right. So our first bad idea comes from our friends over at NPR. And dear listeners, if you would like to read along, there's going to be a link to the article in today's episode description. But the headline reads, "There Can Only Be One. Battle of the Joshes brings hundreds to Nebraska."
This is going to end well.
Oh,
I can already tell.
Don't you worry, it will. Now, the article itself reads, Some have called it Josh Fight or the Josh Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Others will remember it simply as Josh versus Josh versus Josh. No matter the title, hundreds of people who share the first name Josh gathered Saturday in Lincoln, Nebraska to vie for the quote-unquote right to their name. Armed with pool noodles, Joshes from across the country met at Air Park where they brawled as onlookers with other names cheered from the sidelines. In the end, it was four-year-old Lincoln resident Josh Vincent Jr., dubbed Little Josh by his peers, who was crowned the winner.
Okay, this is a great radio moment because in my head, I had Joshes of all of a particular age band in my mind.
No, but it's a good reframing. How many four-year-olds? No. They meant all Joshes.
All Joshes of all ages. Okay, yeah, cool.
The four-year-old on Reddit was like, I have to show up.
The idea for the event began with a Facebook message to the event's organizer, Josh Swain, which was sent last year. Under what Swain referred to in a Reddit post, there we go, as, quote, a spell of pandemic boredom. The 22-year-old college student from Arizona started a group message with as many people he could find on Facebook who shared his first and last name. In doing so, he joined the many others who have sought out their namesake online. Regular listeners to No Bad Idea will remember a similar story we did a little while ago about people who started a band just because they were all,
who all had the same name.
Yes. But Swain's message had a twist, an invitation to his name doppelgangers to duel for the right to be known as Josh Swain, complete with a date, April 24th, 2021, and a random set of coordinates. Quote, we fight. Whoever wins gets to keep the name, he said. Everyone else has to change their name. You have a year to prepare. Good luck. The message was a complete joke, Swain said in the Reddit post. But after sharing screenshots of the conversation on Twitter, the internet responded with a meme-filled fervor, enough to convince Swain to actually make the journey to Lincoln, Nebraska to defend his name. At Saturday's event, which doubled as a food drive and a fundraiser, there were not one, but two Josh Swains in Air Park. The original coordinates Swain selected happened to be located in the middle of a farm, so he moved the location to a more public setting.
Sure.
The name twins, Josh of Arizona and Josh of Omaha, Nebraska, duked it out to be known as the preeminent Josh Swain in a tense battle of rock, paper, scissors. With a final rock, beat, scissors, the event's organizer emerged victorious. The Swain Bowl was followed by the pool noodle fight, which was open to any person with the first name Josh, and later people of all names who wanted to join the mayhem. A live stream of the event was viewed by people as far as Norway and Sweden, who could tune in to see hundreds of Josh, some dressed in Star Wars, Spider-Man, and superhero-themed costume.
Mm-hmm.
By Sunday, the Josh Swain Fund had raised more than $10,000 for the Children's Hospital Medical Center Foundation, which provides medical services to children across Nebraska. In a Reddit post following the event, Swain, now known as the Josh Swain, said that he didn't have a single idea how the event would play out and had worried about how many people would show up. But the result, he said, was a gathering that was incredibly respectful, polite, joyful, and just overall awesome. There's a little bit more information about it, but I think that that's fine for us to leave it here. This is ultimately, it kind of like filed this under bad ideas on this show that ultimately ended up being pretty okay, but could have completely, the base idea though, of kind of challenging random people on the internet to meet you somewhere after they've had a year to prepare to fight you. Random set of coordinates. That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that that is worthy of being considered as a bad idea. Mm. So I'm putting 10 minutes on the timer. How do we want to spend this? Timer starts right now.
I say regardless of medium, we are only allowed to cast people named Josh.
Named Josh?
No, this is Josh Holloway's big comeback project.
Josh Holloway, Josh Hartnett.
Yeah. Oh, man. Josh Hartnett would make a good
organizer.
I was going to say villain, but like.
Fair enough.
But both.
The one who like took it too seriously.
Exactly. Because yeah. I mean, we could start it potentially after Josh Fest 1.0.
After the Swain Bowl.
After the Swain Bowl, where the loser now has to live with a new name.
It's like a
but now like James Swain, shadow of his former self, like gets some inheritance money or something happens where he needs to legally have the name Josh Swain.
Oh no, right.
So like, he has to go back.
Like his eccentric uncle is like, I leave my vast fortune to my singular, you know, nephew named Josh Swain.
And he has to get married.
Right. He has to like change his name back to Josh and marry someone also named Swain.
Yes.
No, and you know what happens though? He like tracks back. He like, you know, like trains and, you know, like goes all out and, you know, finally tracks down the original person, beats them in a duel. But oh no, whoops, that person had given away the name. Now a different person has the name. They are no longer the holder of the name.
So you're suggesting Winchester 73, but for a legal name.
Yes.
I have to say that took a lot longer to get to an old movie reference than I thought it would.
Like, that was 2 minutes restraint. And 5 seconds. Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
We've gotten better at hosting the show. We're still not good at it, but we've gotten better.
I love a good gimmick. I love a good trope. And I could love a good origin story. So we've got all of these already. This is great.
Tell me more about the romance, Lillian Holman. Like, what...
A trope doesn't have to be romance, but the best ones.
No, but you mentioned that now
that he has to get married.
He has to get married. Yes, for the inheritance, because that is one of my favorite tropes.
How often does that come up?
Surprisingly often.
Oh, all right.
At least in like historical ones, so it doesn't quite fit for this.
Yeah, but no, that's like, the Regency was big on that.
Oh,
yeah,
you're right. Okay, sorry, yeah. I needed to reset my phasers. Okay, yeah. No.
So I think definitely like you have to come from it would actually make a lot of sense to fold into the name thing, because if you have a family obsessed with their legacy, they're going to care a lot more about who you marry and when you marry and if you marry.
Right.
So that could also be a reason he's obsessed with his name and why this like very wholesome event is not wholesome for him. So I think that's why he was taking it way more seriously than anybody else was. And I think if you want to go full romance trope, then he will have met someone at the event who's just there for a good time, who's super chill about it all, but like in a way that really irritates our like pretentious Josh. And that's the way you kind of get a very classic odd couple romance going on.
I love it.
I'm just laughing at the mental image of like, if this is a family that like really cares about these things, you know, he like goes home for help from his dad or something. And is like, you know, begging like, father, please, I need help. And his dad is just like, I don't even know who you are anymore. I can't even look at you.
Your mother chose your middle name. How dare you start going by it?
Right.
That actually could be really great if he was stuck in a marriage that was like unhappy, but like, again, because of this like ridiculous family that cares too much about this, like he can't get out of it. So like, I guess that is going full. I was going to pull an old movie reference, Robert Mitchum, old Texas robber baron. Like I have to.
Oh yeah. House on the Hill.
There we go. House on the Hill. Yeah.
Home from the Hill.
Yeah. You just got to like. Yeah. Stuck in an unhappy marriage. And so if he's going by now, like the middle name his mom chose, it's just like, it's all too much.
I'm here for the melodrama.
I'm always here for the melodrama.
Let's just like put like some of these pieces together to make sure that we are kind of following the story correctly.
Yeah.
So we have like the scion of this old sort of, you know, like very traditional, very by the book family, very wealthy. Yes. He sort of grows up, I imagine he's a little bit like Logan Huntsberger from Gilmore Girls, kind of, you know, like very like I don't actually care about like the old family ways. I like, you know, I want to do whatever. I want to live my life. I want to just like go wherever the wind blows me. Right. Until the moment when, of course, he loses everything. And then he's like, you know what was nice? Safety network. And then, yeah, like on a whim, he gets into this name duel with this person across the country who happens to share his name. There can only be one. The other person wins. And we should talk about like what the actual competition is, whether it's rock, paper, scissors, or if it's something a little bit more intense. But whatever,
I think it has to be something slightly more cinematic, unless you want to play up like the sort of Edgar Wright up the comedy of the rock, paper, scissors.
Sure, sure. Like if it's a rock, paper, scissors, it's like shot the way that like Casino Royale's poker is shot.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you know, absolutely. Yes.
Close up of the person considering, close up of the closed fists, close up of this other thing.
I love the sheer chance of rock, paper, scissors. But I also love the idea of like, while all the really goofy stuff is going on, he's in like a corner and like a really intense, like actual fight going on, or like a poker game.
So right, like it's actually bare knuckle boxing, yeah, or something, yeah, that's, yeah, happening, exactly, as all of these adorable children are playing with foam noodles.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he's like in a completely different part of Lincoln.
Right. But however it happens, he loses his name. There's maybe a time jump or something where we rejoin him a year later. He's living in a shanty house somewhere going by his middle right. name because he lost his name. And so his family doesn't want anything to do with him. Mm-hmm. And then, however, he realized that he has his way back in because his uncle just passed away and left him a lot of money. He just needs to get the name back in order to be able to get that money back. Now, is the person that he's marrying, is that the person that took his name? Is that who?
I think it has to be. Right, I think you have to go on like full like enemies to lovers.
So now we've got like this like almost like Sweet Home Alabama sort of thing of kind of like, hey, I know that you don't want anything to do with me, but like get out here and deal with me and like, you know, deal with this family situation that I'm in because of you.
Of course, I would end up writing Sweet Home Alabama, my mistake. but yeah, no, I think that's definitely the like, and if especially if like the person who won is like a sweetheart and is not taking it seriously, like would definitely like feel bad, like goes with it just yes. to, like,
yeah, as soon as they realize yeah. what this did to this dude's family,
yeah,
probably would feel very regretful about it.
Yeah,
but they would also be in this place of like, they would feel regretful, but they would also be in this place of like, you don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
Like, trust me. Like, no, like that family was bad for you.
I
like,
want to
you don't realize
you.
It. You're actually a lot better now than you were when you were living under them.
Yeah. I want to
come live in La Jolla with me.
Scenic La Jolla. What is there not to love?
Oh my. Yeah. It's great.
I'm into this, guys. Yeah. I think this is great.
Yeah.
Well,
there has to be sort of cross-country shenanigans.
Yeah.
Right. Where the two of them are now together.
Yeah, they need to drive from La Jolla to New York for some reason or something
like
that.
Some reason. Yeah.
Oh, no, I think they have to go back to Lincoln. I think it has to go back where it all starts. Yeah.
Sure.
I think.
Is that where they get married?
I think that the, like, rematch of the Joshes needs to happen at the same time as the wedding. Like, the deadline has to be the same.
Love it.
All right. And that is time for that idea.
I care about rules.
No, that was great. You got that last point in right in the nick of time. No,
phenomenal. I think we're ready to pitch schedules. It, guys.
I kept trying to be like, you're almost out of time. But oh, that's a good point that I don't want to interrupt. But also, I don't want to blindside you with, oh, and that's time.
Also, I never talk too much.
Never. Nonsense. Never. I don't know what you're
especially
talking about.
Especially in a classroom situation.
Never.
Alrighty. So that is our first bad idea for today from silly, silly, silly fundraising event in a post-pandemic world to an epic drama of family angst slowly driving these two people together into romance.
Possibly starring the ghost of Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
Unclear.
No, he's not named Josh.
He's not named Josh.
That's fair.
Yeah, I was trying.
That's fair.
I was trying to think about like who
this
are
this is Josh
other...
Holloway all the way.
Like what was the name of the kid in Bridge to Terabithia? He was also a Josh, wasn't he?
He was also a Josh.
I don't know. I don't think there were any classic Hollywood Joshes. I can't.
I was trying to think of that either. So yeah. Either.
Yeah. That's like a whole paper in and of itself.
Josh Hutcherson is the Hutcherson is the actor who was in the In Bridge to Terabithia. And I should not be like, who was that kid? I should be like, that successful actor who has done a lot of like really, really good work. I apologize to the estate of Josh Hutcherson.
It might be his favorite role. You don't know.
It's true. It's true.
Well, I do know that we have to do another bad idea, and I have it. So we can crack on with or without Josh's.
I don't know. I like this handicap in the, casting game for whatever we do of kind of everyone has to have the same.
I love a casting gimmick.
Well, it's going to be a lot more gimmicky when I bring you this idea from Euro Weekly News.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
And this is just, I mean, a fairy tale come to life for one specific Italian man. So the headline of this article reads, Italian artist sells invisible sculpture for 15,000 euro.
Wait a minute.
You've heard this story before, but...
Wait a minute. Just to determine how much of a fit I need to, like, be ready for.
Mm-hmm.
Do the letters N, F, and T show up in this article?
No.
Okay, I'm fine.
This person Proceed. May have... All right, so Salvatore Garou. My apologies to him and all of Italy for the mispronunciations that are about to happen. A 67-year-old artist from Italy, at a time when the art world, like everybody else, is going through a very difficult time with the pandemic, has achieved a remarkable feat.
Yeah, like we could all use a little bit of patience right now. We're all like trying to remember how to world.
This is true. He has sold an invisible sculpture for the sum of 15,000 euro, which is about 10,000 pounds, which is about $20,000.
Is this one of those statues where if you have really good art taste, you can see it? But then, like, if you don't,
save that,
it seems
save
invisible.
Save that for the idea, Gabrielle. Originally, the price was set between 6,000 and 9,000 euro. But when he kept receiving more offers, the price increased. And he ended up selling it for a higher amount.
What a G.
Garou's sculpture, christened Io Sono, I Am, is an immaterial sculpture, which, in so many words, means it does not exist, or that if it did exist, it only existed in the mind of its creator, with many art skeptics criticizing the artist's curious creation. But Garou's response is that he has not sold nothing, but has sold a vacuum.
What a G. I love this man.
Garou explained it. The vacuum is nothing more than a space full of energy. And even if we empty it and there is nothing left, according to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which I did not think was going to come into this story, that nothing has a weight. Therefore, it has energy that is condensed and transformed into particles, that is, into us. He did not add man at the end of that, but he should have. The Italian artist continued, when I decide to exhibit an immaterial sculpture in a given space, that space will concentrate a certain amount and density of thoughts at a precise point, creating a sculpture that, from my title, will only take the most varied forms. After all, don't we shape a god we've never seen?
No.
He asked.
No comment.
The artist points out that his work cannot be displayed just anywhere. It must be located in a space measuring about 150 by 150 centimeters that is free from obstructions, with lighting and climate control being optional, as you can't see the object anyway, all which will be detailed in a signed and stamped guarantee certificate from the artist to the buyer.
A refreshingly low-maintenance statue, then, you know?
Yeah, you know. Garou has another one of his invisible sculptures titled Aphrodite Cries being exhibited in New York, a piece which is another immaterial sculpture that supposedly rests on a circle drawn on the ground, which is the only thing that is visible. And the artist claims that with these works of art, he has started, quote, a new, small, authentic revolution. His first invisible sculpture, called Buddha in Contemplation, was placed 25 meters from the entrance to the Galleria d'Italia in Milan's Piazza del Scala at the Intesa San Paolo exposition grounds, where, among other things, there is a large canvas of Garou himself.
Man, guys.
So I'm going to put...
I'm having horrible grad school flashbacks. What is art?
We're suckers because apparently it is incredibly easy to make money.
Yes.
Apparently.
Art is hard, but money is incredibly easy.
Yeah.
A whole new definition of imposter syndrome.
All right. I'm going to put 10 minutes on this here timer. Tell me about imposter syndrome.
Before we get into it too much, I like have to begrudgingly say that like it sounds like this artist actually has like a project and a thing that he's going for and some like real thought process that is going into this. And I can really, really respect that. The idea of selling these invisible void statues, still funny. You cannot tell me that that is not on some level objectively funny.
No.
But I do want to kind of like put it out there that like, no. Like, we're going to say some things in good fun, but like, I respect this man. Like, this is, I like this. I respect this.
I think the first thought I had, because, you know, I was thinking about like, it's, he's clearly playing with the definitions of art and space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you had a protagonist who was like going there to interview him and like,
right,
like it was her dissertation. Again, I'm not, you know, this is definitely not personal
or bringing anything from my real life
into this.
But I really like this, though.
Yeah. The like, what is art question? What are the boundaries? And she could, it could be kind of like she goes in ready to basically tear him down. And it could be like a whole like self-discovery thing, which, you know, occasionally happens in Italy.
I mean, it's a good place for it, right?
Can I put just like a slight spin on that? Because I really, really like that. Yeah. So I think that the key is that the like void invisible statues are a new turn. Like for 30 years, he's been working on like more traditional forms of sculpture and been like amazing.
Yeah.
And so she's grown up watching his work and been like, I love this guy. This is amazing. This is the reason why I wanted to study art. This is the reason why I went to school and why I got like, you know,
an art historian.
Exactly.
And all of this.
And so, you know, she's now getting her like master's degree and doing her dissertation on him. And all, and is like, I finally got approved to interview him.
Yeah.
And so she goes to Italy, goes to talk to him. And at a certain point, the magic words happen. Ooh, do you want to see the new things that I'm working on? Do you want to like step into the workshop? And it's
do you want to come into my studio?
Like, oh my God, yes, yes, I do. And sure enough, roll back the curtain and behind the curtain, there is
nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, I love that so much. The only other element I wanted was kind of like, I think that I don't know this man's work, so this would be a fictional version of this man.
Yes,
but
which is fine.
I do think if you had her as a mega fan, but if even before the invisible art, he was doing things that were getting him ridiculed in the art world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like if he was like a divisive figure.
I really love, and I definitely have seen this type of before. In other narratives, but just the like, she's like his lone defender and like she's getting torn down in like every classroom she brings him up in. And like,
right,
she could barely find anyone to even like consider like letting her do this.
No, like it took some like real persuading to let her professors approve her dissertation on this guy.
Yeah.
Because everyone was like, yeah, you don't want to study that guy. Like, no, come on.
And there's a lot of pressure on her to turn in something that is a serious evaluation of this man, and like she's there to be serious but also to like champion the things that he does that are great. And she's looking at this room full of nothing and seeing like not only the ridicule for his career but her career go up in smoke. You know,
but you know what happens? He exhibits this, and for the first time the art world is unanimous. Mwah!
Exactly.
Genius. And she's like, No, hang on. Whoa. Slow your roll. No, hang on a second. This is the, no. The other stuff was great. And they're like, no. The other stuff was garbage. This is what we're here for.
Right. And now she is in the position of critic and does not want to be.
Right, exactly.
I love this.
I also think that I would love to see her, again, a whole journey, but like have her before it gets exhibited, bring back the like draft of her dissertation where she's like, wrestling with it and can't grasp it, and have that get like shut down, being like, no, and have her kind of life implode. And then he exhibits it, and then it gets raved. And then so she's now in this position where she thought she was going to be an academic, and now she's a critic.
Right.
And
right, now she,
I think that could be really fun.
Absolutely.
That could be very fun.
No, I really quite like that.
Yeah.
Well, we still have 5 minutes. So are there any side plots?
Well, she could have to
Adventures
get married.
Adventures in Italy? No. I think it would probably be good for her not to be married at the end of
Well, if she wants her inheritance.
That's true.
No. There's so much fun you could have in Italy.
That inheritance is contingent on her getting that art degree.
Right.
No, but like, I do think that it is worth it to have, like, maybe she has like a boyfriend back home that comes along to Italy with her. And, you know, and they love each other, but he cannot tell a Picasso from a 6-year-old kid finger painting.
He's a video game designer. And so he gets
the
like AR, VR. Yeah. Invisible use of space, like he's completely on the same wavelength as her hero artist.
And what I would love is that if she was like on the verge of breaking up with him, partly because she's like, you don't understand what I do, you're not, and pulling a Legally Blonde, the like, you can't take this seriously, but and then to have somehow he still has to go to Italy with her and she has to like postpone the breakup. And their time
she's
going to
wait until they get back.
Yeah.
She really meant to do it, but he like got her like a present or something. She just didn't have the heart.
Right. Or like he got them at this nice hotel or something, let a suite for the two of them. And she's like, well,
maybe we'll do one last vacation together and then break up.
And I do think he has to be like unwavering support. And he's the one who gets it. And he's the one who doesn't laugh at the invisible art when it's first revealed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think definitely. And of course, they do have to break up temporarily. Like, I think when her life implodes, but then they have to come back together.
In the middle of a piazza in Milan.
Yes,
obviously.
Of course. With some birds. There definitely have to be.
I love it.
Yeah.
But they'll get back together at the artist's gallery show at the end.
He becomes the artist's assistant, or like he starts working for the artist.
Nice.
I think that should be.
Does she eventually get it? Because I think that there's like two intuitive endings. One intuitive ending is sort of like, I finally see the code in the matrix. I understand what you're going for. I didn't get it at first, but no, like this is great. Or there's the version of it that is like, no, I get it. I get what you're going for. I still hate it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, we are allowed to, like, disagree about this. And, like, you know, that is part of having a healthy media relationship with your idols and your creators.
I think the second one.
Yeah,
much more
definitely
than
the second.
Yeah.
Twist. Because I think everyone's expecting the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think it has a Ben Wyatt not getting Lil Sebastian, but wearing the t-shirt vibe. Like, he's gonna be like,
has not seen Parks and Rec, that was a hilarious callback to.
I was trying to hold back on references, but I just needed that one.
No,
anyway.
No, it's great.
Just take our word that was illustrative as fuck. If you have no idea what was just said,
No, but I definitely think there has to be an element of, I still don't get it. But I love and support you for doing this. And I respect the different way your brain works sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Going on.
And I respect the way that my brain works, too.
Yeah.
And just because I don't get it doesn't mean I don't have taste.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, you can't be my hero or whatever.
Yeah. No. I definitely think she'll have to have some imposter syndrome going on so that there is definitely some visual metaphors going on with like the invisible art that not everyone can see.
Well, that'd she always fun. Really identified with his work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like she saw her sculptures and it was like looking at a mirror, but even better, like, you know, like his art and like each new one, she identified with it more.
Yeah.
And she's so ready to see herself. And then he pulls back the curtain and what's behind the curtain? Nothing.
I think there should also be an element that she wanted to be an artist when she was like a kid or like a teenager, and then decided she wasn't good enough. And that's when she pivoted into studying it. And so that maybe by the end, if she's not like an artist herself, she's like exploring that part of herself again.
Yeah. Or like maybe it wasn't just that like she wasn't good enough for it, but just kind of a like, I feel that this is a better fit for me.
No, this feels safer. Yeah. And that's time.
All right.
I definitely didn't channel anything in that one.
No, art has nothing to do with our lives.
Art is
in fact meaningless.
Yeah. And studying art, I've never done that.
None of us have. This was delightful, guys. I think we should make both of these. They'd be great movies.
Does anyone know a Josh?
We do know a Josh, actually.
Yes. Let's give Josh a call and see if he wants to get a package with these. So give us a moment, dear listeners, to go do that, and we'll be right back with more No Bad Ideas.
Sarah here. I have just a quick message for you before we get back to the delightful Lillian Holman. We have an active Patreon page. I've said this, Zach has said it, Gabrielle has said it. So really, what are you waiting for? You should go check it out. It has tons of cool bonus content that we put there for No Bad Ideas every month. You can get the archive of the entire show, and it is our source at this point for the resources that we need to make this show and all of the other awesome podcast projects that we do. To those of you who are already supporting us, thank you so much. And if you would like to get in on the action, then please head to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Again, that is nobadideaspodcast.com/support. It's called that because we would really appreciate your support in making this and all of our other shows. So let's get back to it. All right, now that we have gotten a hold of many Joshes.
Even though there can only be one.
There can only be one. But we wanted to take some time to talk to you, Lillian Holman, about your journeys in creativity and writing and thinking about art.
My very straightforward journey.
Well, that's where I wanted to start is generally what we ask folks, what mistakes did they make to bring them to podcasting? And what was that journey like for you?
Bad turns led to you being here?
Again, you know, I've only ever wanted one thing in my life. I've only ever had one title. No. Well, I got into podcasting officially about a year and a half ago, literally 6 months before the pandemic started. So hilariously, I have now made a bunch of different podcasts and have stepped into a studio once. But before that, I was in grad school for film studies, hence the grad school element of our last conversation. And that was a continuation of what I did at undergrad as well, because I kind of fell in love with studying the history of film and analyzing film. But academia turned out to be the wrong fit. And so I moved out to LA. And I had the incredible luck that Lauren Shippen of Atypical Artist was hiring. So I got to go work with her and Jordan Cope and Brigand Snow over at Atypical Artist for about
all
a
those
year.
Terrible people.
I know, they're the worst.
They know nothing about podcasting. Mm-mm. I didn't learn a thing.
Not only are they unkind, they are also inexperienced in the world of podcasting.
I like the terrified part of me needs to really specify how sarcastic we're being.
We're being so
sarcastic.
I love
them so much.
They're the best.
And I learned everything from them. So that while I was there, I was started as a production assistant and then became a production manager. And now I am a freelancer and I mostly do production management, but I have also done assistant editing. I have done writing and researching, mm-hmm. and I have also just kind of done straight off producing. So it's been a journey, but I love, it's really funny because it was partly because I saw you guys get into podcasting early on that it was on my radar and I knew the indie sphere. And I loved the people in the community, not just my friends, but also just like the voices, the actors. And I wanted to hop into that. And I loved that it was this kind of low barrier to entry and this really unpretentious world where it really was like we were hiring people not based off of their name, but like their talent. And I love the new voices that get to be fostered by it. And so I've been really happy to help make it happen.
Unpretentious until we got involved, right?
Oh, Sarah? Yeah.
We took care of that.
You're never pretentious. No, you are not pretentious.
No, you saw our pretension and then you went to California where there was less of it.
That's right. Yes. No, and I do want to sort of say that, like, you know, you were not only watching us, but you were actively helping us. Like,
you were helping us,
that's right. Even did story and development work on Wolf 359.
I did.
So, you know, I think that you had you were getting your own feet wet very quickly. But let's talk about sort of the diving into the pool now that the feet are wet, because you now have your very own show under
my baby.
Atypical. how did Greenhouse come about? Where did the story for that first come from?
Totally. Greenhouse was percolating for a long time because I'm such a homebody that I loved. I was fascinated by how, in a weird way, how easy it would be. And this was pre-pandemic, I should very much specify.
I know, this show has gotten prescient, but it did start before.
It did start of this, like, you really could live, if you wanted to, in your four walls and get things delivered and get things. And so this kind of, like, modern-day hermit, I was fascinated by that idea. And mental health has always been at the forefront of a lot of the work I want to do, because I think, for me, shows that handle it beautifully are really great extra tools. So I wanted to make something that could bring a spotlight to mental health, but also like be a comforting one and also be fun. So I've been fascinated by modern day hermits. So Rose was kind of the first character. She's the one who is agoraphobic and stays home and can't leave without essentially having a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then Abby, what I loved is that Abby has her own issues. And in so many ways, like, Rose is coaching her from afar to get her over her anxieties. So it's like Rose's anxieties are more forefront. It's a little more like, oh, you don't leave your house. That's more tangible.
Right. And more like socially weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Abby's is like internally, she's just constantly questioning everything she does. Has her own social anxieties, and Rose is kind of helping her with those. So that is a very long way to get back to the fact that I've been thinking about these two for a long time. And it wasn't originally a romance. It was originally a friendship. And I just decided it would be more fun to make it a romance. And the way it came across in this iteration.
Well, once you found out that they both had inheritances,
yes,
that they couldn't
yes.
get,
yeah, that
then,
they need
you know,
to get married.
The romance had to happen.
I think I did finish a romance novel like a week ago that had that particular plot. So it's just at the forefront.
Sure.
But yeah, so this particular iteration, because it also wasn't always a podcast. I have actually very distinct visuals that I associate with it, like of Abby with lots of flowers, like biking through La Jolla. Again, I have not been sponsored by the city of La Jolla.
You should
Today's
be.
Episode of No Bad yeah. Ideas is brought to you by La Jolla.
But this iteration came to be because Lauren Shippen of Atypical Artist, who I was working with at the time, was kind of like, if you put together two pages, I will read them and we'll take a look. And what I realized was that this was something that could definitely be recorded. I could adjust it and make it easy to record during a pandemic.
Right. It was pandemic executable.
Yeah. It was totally pandemic executable because you didn't need people in the same room because it was reading letters. So I put together a pitch and Lauren, the angel that she is, greenlit it. And so that's how it kind of became epistolatory, because I was just, we're going to have them read it. I directed it, but in the loosest sense of the term, because our actresses, who I should give a huge shout out to, Rose is played by Alex Marshall Brown. Abby is played by Helen Highfield. We met, we talked about the characters, and then I sent them the scripts and they gave me a couple of different options. I sent back some feedback. We made it work and they did beautifully.
Hey, that sounds like directing to me.
What? I diminished what I did? I never do that. So yeah, so we did that and that's how it came to be. It was just, it worked really well for the moment. And it was really fun for me to kind of, I love writing. I don't always get to be a writer. And so this was a really fun chance to do it. And I loved the team I worked with. I should also give a shout out to the show art by Emily Chen, which I like.
It's gorgeous.
Oh my gosh. I had that on every background. I would just stare at it. It's so pretty. So
I would love to ask you about writing epistolatory.
Yes.
Episodes, because it's a very specific discipline to sort of be writing letters, and how you sort of handle revealing information and how characters are not speaking to each other, but like trying to present themselves to each other. Yeah. And like when they get more honest and when they're being more presentary. And like, did you do a lot of reading to understand that form? Have you always liked that form? What was it like to sort of do that kind of writing?
Yeah, a bit more of the latter, actually. I've just always really enjoyed that form. I was an English double major in college along with film. And so a lot of the origins of the novel are epistolatory novels. I can't say I recommend a lot of those novels, but I loved the format. I loved the format. And I've also loved a couple of modern ones, like just young adult ones I read as a kid, whenever they played with the format and it became like almost like in audio terms would be, or audio and video terms, would be just like found footage of like, oh, this was totally something I just stumbled upon and it's telling a story. So that came to be. And I also like, there's some really great other examples in podcasting. Specifically, there's Love and Luck, which is an Australian podcast, which told exclusively over voicemail. And so I've always loved just playing with format like that. The epistolatory was actually very natural to write in, because it was, I guess it's like a bit like acting, but I'm not an actress, but it was a bit like acting when I was writing, because you just kind of embodied them. And I was responding to the letter I wrote a week ago, and it made sense that it became kind of a back and forth conversation. Also, what I liked about it was that it was a very natural way for these two people to communicate because they're so socially anxious. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is a medium where they don't have to actually interact with each other. They can sit down, they can think about what they're saying, and it's at lower stakes. So I liked it. I also like, this is horrible, but I love conversations and I hate action and plot. If I could just sit down and have conversations with people, that's what I love to write, which is terrible.
The screenwriting gurus must love you.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, action? I don't need action, which is also hilarious because I like am also like a big believer in like silent film and like talking through action as well. So this total opposite, but yeah.
I also like actions happen in Greenhouse. Like,
they do,
you know,
they do. Yeah.
Just because it all happens in an epistolary format.
That doesn't mean that there's no plot. Like,
yes. I think Sarah and I are both trying to be a little coy here with the developments that occur in the series.
Indeed, we are.
To not spoil
because
this for anyone.
People should discover it.
Yes. No, and like, again, shout out to Lauren. She was reading every script and giving feedback and was a really great creative partner on this. And yeah, like things happen. My favorite writing exercise ever was like, take a character and write down 100 random facts about them. And I'm like, yes, this is what I want to do. I like creating people, essentially.
It's super fun.
Speaking of those people, we talked briefly about Alex Marshall Brown and Helen Highfield, who so expertly and compassionately played these characters.
Yeah.
A lot of, I feel, podcaster or podcast listeners might know them from AM Archives, where they played
very different,
very different,
very antagonistic You might say that they had a rather murderous relationship on that show.
You might say
so
that.
Where did this amazing chaotic decision of, oh, you know what, let's put these two people in a romance, where did that come from?
I wish I could say it was anything more than just like fangirling on my part. I had heard them before. I turned to Laura and was like, do you think they'd do it? And they did. I do think, like, again, what's fun about Helen in AM Archives is that she has such a sweet voice. Right. That you can kind of like, that makes her all the more terrifying as a villain. And I won't give too much away about AM. And then Alex is just like got such a wonderfully soothing, dignified, but also hilarious voice when she needs it. Both of them are just totally perfect for them. And it was also one of those things of like, it would have been so weird or hard if they had said no, because I started like writing with their voices mm-hmm. in mind, because we definitely like, I was writing as the process was still happening. So they embodied it so beautifully, and it was fun to give them something different to play with. Definitely, this is shocking. This will be a spoiler to most, but there is no murder in Greenhouse. So
spoilers.
I mean, I'm still holding out hope, but
yeah, who knows? Like season 7.
Yeah, it's going to go real Desperate Housewives later on down the line.
Good season 7 problem to have.
Yeah, but I love them so much. And like I just remember meeting with them and they were so excited and so willing to like, anyway, I could wax poetic about both of them for hours on end. So I will hold back.
Okay, so here's a question for you, Lily. Mm-hmm. And this will be fun, because this will be a little bit of a reversal of sorts for us.
Yeah.
Something that is often said about me and Sarah's work is it's often kind of observed that our work has a very cinematic style mm-hmm. to it, which is both very flattering, but I have to confess, sometimes when I get asked about that, I feel a little deer in the headlights, because yeah. I'm not often sort of thinking like, yes, let me bring in that cinema technique into the audio. It's not often really a conscious thought process, although it does show yeah. up. And what a rare luxury to have someone here that actually went through a lot of the same formal training that Sarah yeah. and I went through, and a lot of the same.
Man, kind of, we held back that we all went to college together for way too long.
I'm gonna try to make it count here at the end, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because yes, you also kind of went through a lot of that same forge and were kind of, you know, mm-hmm. built down the way that we were built down, and then built back up the way that we mm-hmm. were built back up. And so now as you're kind of writing and working mm-hmm. and producing in audio, yeah. do you find yourself kind of leaning into a lot of the stuff that you kind of like learned during your formal field training? Mm-hmm. Or do you find yourself kind of like consciously trying to like lean away from it and kind mm-hmm. of do things? And if the answer is yes, that's okay. But I'd just be curious about your thoughts on it.
Well, I think, no, it's a really good question. And it's what I love about the way we studied film in particular was that we learned how to focus on different elements. So mm-hmm. we could like keep track. You guys know that my favorite was always color. If like you could keep track of right. how a filmmaker used color throughout a film, then it tells a whole different story within the story. So I think one thing that advantage that gives us is that when we're thinking about audio, we're actually thinking about audio, and we're thinking about that element and mm-hmm. what it does that the visuals don't do, or the advantages to that, because in a weird way, we've been trained to do that already while studying a different medium. So I don't think I have to lean away from it. And I do think that in the end, storytelling is storytelling. I think that's one of the reasons, actually, if we go all the way back to giving my crazy bio, I've had trouble landing somewhere, is because I love storytelling in all its formats. And so I love making podcasting the same way I loved working on student films in college, or I love curling up with a book or binge watching something and talking someone's ear off about why it's working and why it's not, or why Ben Wyatt's t-shirt makes such a difference to his character. Pulling it again, I study media. We have to bring everything back. Motifs.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that I'll try to answer the question. I think I lean in mostly. I think I do lean in because I think it's helpful. And I think the other thing about audio, again, versus cinema and having studied cinema and now switching into audio, is some of the best films and TV shows have been made with very strict restrictions in mind. And so I think if you're almost treating it like a new challenge of like, how do you tell a story with just audio?
Right.
Yeah. It is a bit like, how do you create Jaws with a defective shark? How do you create that? So I think, yeah, I think I lean in.
Right. That's great.
That's awesome.
I could not have put it better myself. That's so awesome.
Switching modes for a second. I haven't done that in a while.
Well, we like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Just don't get me started on Moana. Positively, again.
Of course. Well, I mean, now we're going to have to do an entire new episode to talk only about Moana. But unfortunately, we are almost out of time for this episode. So we should start to wrap things up here.
Yeah.
Lily, if people want to hear more from you and sort of, you know, follow you for more of your thoughts and your insights,
follow your work.
Where's the best place to do that? How do we make that happen?
So I have a Twitter. It is at LilyMouse26. You can see my random work, but also my random thoughts and retweets mostly. I also have a website of all things. I'm lilyholman.com.
Fancy.
And then if you want Greenhouse in particular content, go to atypicalartist.co, not .com, .co/greenhouse, or follow at atypicalartists on Twitter, and they will send you updates on that as well. And you'll get to also hear about a couple of the other shows I production managed for them.
Well, make sure that you don't forget to check out Greenhouse and the rest of Lily's work, dear listeners. And we'll be back next week for another episode of No Bad Ideas. See you all then.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.